Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
He's talking about your genitals.
It is Thursday, which means it's time for the Front 3 Q&A podcast with me, Adam Bolt, with the one and only Nico Morales.
Me first today on the intro as well.
Second is Lawrence McKenna.
Me second today.
And last but not least is David O'Brien, Statman Dave himself.
Keeping the best till last, I do see, Adam.
Oh, you could say that. How was your move to Manchester, Dave? You're officially up north now.
I hate moving. It's absolutely toilet. It's probably one of the worst things you can do as a human being, honestly.
That may be in that well.
Definitely not.
Yeah, the boxes give you real, you know, stress, don't they? Because you want them you want your boxes in like a 4-4-2, and they're just all over the place.
Classic.
It's like
box
watching. I don't know. It's like watching Louis van Gaal's Manchester United. There's no structure.
Sounds about right. Guys, thanks so much for joining us. We're here to answer your questions, as always, on a Thursday. I think we're going to talk a little bit of League Cup action as well. I mean, who really cares? But we'll discuss it anyway. And we'll also be previewing this weekend's big action in part two, our Fan League preview, as always. So do stay tuned for that. Before all that exciting stuff, though, it is time once again for Hole of the Week, our favourite iTunes review of the week. If you want to get involved, if you want to be potentially the winner of a box of Ferrero Rocher chocolates, all you have to do is click on the link in the description of the podcast, review and rate the Front Three on iTunes to be in with a chance. We actually had quite a few reviews this week. Last week there was zero. The emotional blackmail clearly worked. Nico, you're going to choose the winner this week. You get to choose who gets that box of Ferrero Rocher. Let's go for a few of them here. First up, we've got Dusto69, who says, I just listened to your latest podcast and heard you're lacking reviews. I thought to myself, there's no way you can't have any. So here I am. Your show is very entertaining, and I have been looking for a good soccer podcast for a while, and I can say in all honesty, I have now found it. I'm from Australia, and there is a lack of good football content. The sports radio channels here only ever talk about the AFL, and I just get sick of it. It was so refreshing and exciting to me to be able to hear your podcast on the drive home today and hear you guys talking about my team Chelsea. You have now found a solid fan. I can't wait until next week's episode. 5 stars, very nice review. Thank you very much, Dusto69. I also got one here from Sandini from the USA, who says, I have to agree, Front Three is a great podcast. 5 stars, excellent podcast, one of the best in the category, especially when everyone is indoors with a good microphone. So Sandini will be happy today. I've been listening to the pod for a while now, and you guys do a great job breaking down the conversation around football, from tactical analysis to socio-political aspects of the game. It's always a fantastic listen. I'll be looking forward to future interviews and the continued improvement of the pod. Keep up the good work, fellas. From New York City, Santiago. Thank you very much, Sandini, for your review. We also had one here from Honky Sachmo, who said, best journos in football, 5 stars. Lawrence McKenna and Statman Dave for gay dual prime ministers. Not quite sure what to make of that one, but it's 5 stars
definitely,
nonetheless.
Definitely 50% possible.
Yeah, at least 50%. And finally, we've got one here from KKGG from the UK, who say, great, 5 stars. And their review simply says, Nico Morales, thumbs down. Apart from Nico, the great podcast is worth a listen. So there you have it. 4 reviews there.
This gets my vote.
Definitely not that one.
Definitely not that one. Okay, yeah, that's strange. That's funny. Of those 3, then, I think it probably boils down to... Sandini from the USA, who loved the tactical analysis and socio-political aspects, or Dusto 69 from Australia, who's just found the podcast, heard we were lacking reviews, thought he'd help us out. Out of those two, Nico,
both were good.
They were both quite good.
The thumbs down review really got to me. I actually read it earlier this week, and it's just been marinating. And I every night I'm just quite staring blankly at the ceiling, or listening to it. thinking
about
it.
Some sad wanks, hey.
Out of the two that Adam has given me, I'd probably say the guy from Australia.
Yeah, we got. I really enjoyed that review from Dusto69, a new listener. Thanks so much for writing your review. You've won the Ferrero Rocher, so do get in touch. Slide into those DMs on Twitter, even my Twitter at Adam Bulwood, all the front threes, and we'll try and get you those chocolates. Yeah, a lot of winners from Australia recently. We did get called out for anti-Australia bias, so apparently we're really, really writing that wrong. Guys, if you want to be the whole of the week, next Thursday, all you have to do is leave your review and rating on iTunes. Do get involved. It helps us. Go up the charts, I think, maybe.
Did you say you were going to send the person who left the best review next week an iPhone X, Adam? Is that what you said?
I definitely don't think I said that. Okay, definitely don't think I said that. I think I said about chocolates. That's usually how it works.
A box of iPhone X.
A box of iPhones, yeah. Just we make so much money here at the Front Free, you know. I'm like the Robin Hood of podcasts. Just want to share the wealth, you know. Anyway, let's move swiftly on to the Carabao Cup, the League Cup. Some really exciting games that we're going to get through as quickly as possible. Starting with, let's start with Man City, Nico. Man City 0, Wolves 0. Man City winning on penalties in the end after Wolves denied them in 90 minutes. The first team to stop Pep's side scoring in 90 minutes this season. That was all the Bulls' fault, apparently, so Guardiola said.
Apparently, but I just want to point out, he also mentioned that, you know, I think he has this weird thing in press conferences where he likes to be as truthful as possible, but the media kind of looks for the sound bites that they're looking for. And he mentioned that he wouldn't have said anything about the ball had Manchester City not gone through. But apparently the players have complained as well. And other people that I've talked to that have also experienced the ball also agree that it is not of professional quality, but it is what it is. You got to play with the ball that you're given. You got to play with the circumstances that you're given. So I don't necessarily agree with him coming out and talking about it. But as I mentioned to you pre-record, Adam, I think the teams that aren't in the Carabao Cup anymore probably got the better end of the deal, considering how hectic the schedule will be. And with Manchester City and their current squad deficiencies, you know, we might have two left backs with Zinchenko and Delph, but still, you know, Benjamin Mendy is going to be out for the entire season, and you want to see as little, you know, wear and tear on the squad as possible. And with more games, the more wear and tear there is, and there will actually be more congestion in the winter period because the season will actually be shorter because they have to leave a specific amount of time for the World Cup this summer. So the winter period for clubs who are involved in all four competitions is going to be absolutely brutal. So I think the teams that aren't in it are somewhat benefiting from that. You know, they take a little bit of a hit in the media, but you know, they don't have to play in a trophy that a lot of people don't really care about that much. But I guess to specifically talk about Manchester City against Wolves, I thought it was a good performance. Wolves, it's not like opposition is going to go back and watch this game as to how, you know, to stop Manchester City, because they still created a ton of chances. It was just, you know, their goalkeeper had a really good day. Their defense was actually really good. It limited the chances, but it didn't completely stop them. I think the most tactically significant thing that I can come onto about the game is sort of the inversion of the left back once again, in this case Zinchenko. He was used as a sort of a free-flowing attacking midfielder in the club's previous, and I don't think like this left back position is necessarily his permanent one, but I think him slotting in there and the way that Manchester City use it, basically they create a triangle of movement at the very edge of the formation, sort of between the two defensive lines, and through the movement of those three players, whether it be the central midfielder takes a wide position and the forward comes deep, or the fullback is wide and the central midfielder, basically through some movement like that, one of them ends up free in sort of the final third with kind of space. And Zinchenko was was allowed to do that number of times. He didn't take full advantage of that. I think he hasn't necessarily played a senior game in a while, so I understand if he looks a little bit rusty, but I'd like to see him and sort of Delph used rotationally, because if we just play Delph there every single game, there's a chance, considering his injury history, that something might happen. So I'm excited for his development as a player this year in sort of a unique position, and I'm also excited for the rotation that Manchester City can have.
Have you thought about how you would actually play against City? Like, it can't be there's no such thing as an unplayable system. Have you thought about how you would play City?
Yeah, definitely. I think I'm still very scared to play Manchester United and Spurs, because I think there are elements of their pressing that can expose Manchester City. Specifically, I think it's more of not necessarily falling prey to the overloads. Like I mentioned, the triangle of movement on the left or right-hand side. So on the left-hand side, it was Zinchenko, Gundogan, and Gabi Jesus on the left, and Raheem Sterling, Bernardo Silva, and Danilo on the right. And if you can, Arsenal actually did it really well during the Cup, the FA Cup semifinal, where they basically dedicated a certain amount of players to stopping that triangle of movement, and it did work, and they were allowed to hit them on the counterattack, and they beat them in that game. And so I think if you can do those sort of things, I've seen Mourinho employ sort of a very defensive, like rib cage like formation, where it's a similar thing. It basically built to negate the overloads. And so if we're super dependent on those two triangles of movement outside of that, then that can become a problem. But I think the solution in that case would be to transition to a more last city, you know, last year like City, where the onus or the pivot of the formation's movement was dependent on the central midfielder, which if we have Gundogan and Fernandinho and Yaya Toure all fit, then there's a wealth of options in that position. I think it's just transitioning that and maybe being prepared pre-match to what someone like Mourinho or Pochettino might do. But I've definitely thought about it, because I think, you know, with how Manchester City are sort of disassembling teams, it's important to look to the future and see how Manchester City themselves can be disassembled.
Were you talking about the left back situation there? When is Benjamin Mendy supposed to roughly make a return for?
It's not until very late. It's January. Like April.
Okay.
No, it's April. It's ACL tear.
So. Yeah. What's all the shark team stuff about that with Mendy?
I think it's just like a personification of what he views the Manchester City team as. He's like, you know, he just. Yeah, it's just like, you're hungry, you want success, so, you know, we're a team of, you know, it's like saying the same thing as, like, team of killers, you know, team of hungry athletes that want to achieve something. It's a shark team.
Did they come out?
No, which shark is it? I mean, it could be a basking shark.
I would imagine great white, you know.
They're not actually the most efficient killers. They don't kill that many things a year. So
am I making this up? Was this last week or like 2 weeks ago? Did they wear...
Oh, sure, a hammerhead.
Yeah. Did they wear Shark Team t-shirts with that Mendy 22 on the back? So am I making that?
Yeah.
Did I dream?
I think you can buy them.
No.
I think you can buy them.
Oh, so it was all a cynical marketing stunt.
It was a cynical marketing thing. I understand. Sorry, Nico. I thought the Man City had actually grown hearts. It's all right. Yeah. Don't worry.
I just really, at
the Manchester City games, you can. There are actually a bunch of Shark inflatables now. So.
Wow. Really?
Yeah.
It's really cool.
I think the idea with that is to, because obviously players in injury, like especially as a former athlete myself, like going through a difficult injury, not being able to run for a specific amount of time, so much of your life as, you know, an active person, as I imagine so much so a professional athlete is through physical activity, that it can be sort of difficult to cope with that. And Gundogan is definitely no stranger to that. Thiago Alcantara is definitely no stranger to that. And they've both spoken about how important, you know, the culture of the club and the people around you are to sort of getting through that period from a mental state. And I think keeping someone like Benjamin Mendy very happy and sort of distracted and as positive as possible by engaging in sort of the shark team, however cynical a marketing thing that
I mean,
you know. Which small football team is going to be the first ones to wear like Hooper and Quint t-shirts and be like, we're going to hunt down the sharks?
I'm just thinking, is this when you come over to the UK in a few weeks, Nico, are we all going to have to wear Morales shirts, number whatever, something?
You're going to have to. Yeah.
He's not dead.
I mean, he's just saying there about the important mental impact that can have, Lawrence. You know, you've got.
Do you know what would be really good? Do you know what would be great, right? Is if as Man City were attacking, the Man City fans all went, duh, duh,
Yeah, that would be impressive.
And then it built perfectly to the moment of the goal.
Let's get back to actual football briefly. Because
that's actual football, Adam. Sorry. That's what real football is.
Another team in Manchester won this week. Dave, the holders, Manchester United, your team reaching the quarterfinals with ease thanks to Jesse Lingard. How thrilling.
It was a thrilling game. You know, two moments of brilliant movement from Jesse Lingard, you know, playing behind a two-man strike force, United playing a 3-4-1-2. And I think Jesse Lingard suits this position. He suits being, you know, the guy that's making those late runs. Rio Ferdinand always talks about Jesse Lingard in a central area and how impressed he was, you know, watching him at youth level. But I think Jesse Lingard, when he's playing behind a single striker, is a bit limited. He, you know, he does move to the wide areas. We saw against Huddersfield, he didn't have a great game there. But when he's playing behind a two-man strike force, it's quite interesting. If you look at the stats of those two performances against Swansea City, Jesse Lingard had 5 shots on goal, created 2 chances, had 10 touches inside the penalty area. You flip that to the game against Swansea, he had 0 shots on goal, created only a single chance and had 3 touches inside the penalty area, but they were all really wide. Of course, he scored twice against Swansea, so it's just showing the difference in tactical fluidity that Mourinho is sort of going with this season. I think this back three system has got to be what he's going until Paul Pogba's back, because United were so poor against Huddersfield in a central area. They looked a lot better playing with a 2 strikers and 1 behind. There was more movement. There was more movement from the strikers coming off the line to receive the ball. There was also that movement from Jesse Lingard going the other way. So if you were to sort of consider Mourinho and Manchester United as an animal, they're probably the orca whale right now. Of course, Manchester City are the sharks, but orca whales are the dominant animal in the ocean. And we'll see at the end of the season that once again, the orca whale will eat the shark, of course, and lift the Premier League title.
That's not how... Right, okay. That isn't always... To be fair, they don't hunt in similar waters. So that's
doesn't matter.
That's a good analogy, Dave, but orca whales don't eat throat.
Lawrence, orca whales eat what they want, mate.
Wow. Okay. Right. Okay. What about the goldfish, Adam? How did Spurs do?
Oh, the goldfish. I didn't actually watch this game. I didn't see it because I don't care one jot about the Carabao Cup. I went to see Thor Ragnarok.
What did you? I was going to ask what you watched instead.
Thor. I went to see the third installment in the Thor trilogy, the latest in the
Marvel. Thor or Thor?
You know, Thor. All right. I have to pronounce that carefully. Thor, I went to see it. It was great. It was great fun, hilarious, one of the best Marvel films. And I think it was a great use of my time. Instead of watching Spurs lose 3-2 to West Ham.
3-2 after a comeback.
Yeah, I mean, I found it very hard to care at all. I know it's West Ham and you never want to lose to your rivals. And it's a cup game at home and blah, blah, blah. But I don't care about that. I don't care about the League Cup. I think, as Nico was pointing out to earlier, it's a big sort of drain on the squad. It'll add to an already hectic schedule, and I'm happy.
It finishes in February, Adam.
But that's like, it's going to be one of the busiest periods around Christmas for us.
I don't take this at all. It's absolute rubbish.
Do you care about the League Cup, Dave? Do you actually care about the League Cup? Oh, no. You have to repeat your question. Just have to repeat your answer because it all broke up. Dave, do you actually care about the League Cup?
Yeah, I do care about the League Cup. I think it's important for clubs. I think it's the first trophy of the season. I think it puts you in a real good mentality. And I think the consideration there, if Spurs did care about the league, they did care about the Premier League, there's Champions League, sorry, it's about getting out the FA Cup quickly, not the League Cup. The League Cup finishes in February. What? You have a break for the Champions League in December to February. You can play the League Cup. You can win the League Cup, and then you're in the Champions League, and you've got some momentum. So I think it's a bit of a mistake.
I'd rather win the FA Cup, but like
this is the thing. Why would you rather win the FA Cup?
Because you're both losers. Jesus, come on.
It's just the same thing. It's just a cup competition in England. The smart thing about the League Cup is that you got it over and done with February.
Yeah, but would you rather win the League Cup or the FA Cup?
Oh, right. I'd rather win the FA Cup, obviously.
Yeah.
That's a more
I'd rather win the League Cup, better trophy.
You're winding me up.
Takes like half a season.
Better trophy. Good trophy, the league. Same thing as the FA Cup. The FA Cup starts in January.
I don't buy all this mentality stuff either. I don't think.
Yeah, but in the better half.
I think if, say, let's say in a hypothetical world, Spurs did beat West Ham and they went on to win the League Cup, everyone would just be saying, oh, it's only the League Cup. You know, they need to win a real honour in order to build that winning mentality. I don't think it's the sort of trophy that really transforms the image around the club. I mean, even
what is it? What's image? This is the thing. This is the concept of modern football fans. Is they're so fickle with trophies. You've won the League Cup. I went to the League Cup final last year. I was ecstatic when United won the League Cup. It's not like it's a day out trophy.
It's just, you know, in terms of what we're talking about, how Spurs have aspirations and a genuine chance, given their, you know, tactical fluidity this season, to really push for the title, considering how they perform against both good teams and bad teams. You would rather have less wear and tear on an already thin squad as opposed to just winning a League Cup.
It's funny how fickle United fans are, isn't it? One minute they call Liverpool's treble in whatever year it was.
Yeah, but it wasn't a Mickey Mouse. It wasn't a good treble, was it, Lawrence? It was a Mickey Mouse treble.
But Dave, you literally just said to me, a trophy's a trophy. Like,
yeah, but at the same time, you're comparing the 1999 treble with the 2001 treble. That's like completely
polar. He's drank the Kool-Aid, Lawrence. There's no point.
But, yeah, it's a good point. It's a good point, Nico. You're already on your way, Dave. Go on.
Dave, I understand what you're saying. I understand what Dave's saying, but for me, I don't buy into that whole thing about winning a cup competition all of a sudden transforms the mentality and builds a winning mentality, and therefore will, especially the League Cup, I don't think that's something so significant that it builds towards that. I know Jose Mourinho apparently rates the League Cup and apparently counts the Community Shield in his free trophies from last year. But for me, I just don't personally care about the league.
So here's another question, right? Mourinho had 54 more votes for Coach of the Year in the best awards that have come up recently.
One of them.
Do you think that's right over Pochettino? Do you think that's correct?
No, but I definitely think that the skewing and the fact that journalists and things, you get to see their votes afterwards, and it's not really, it's a PR campaign ahead of anything else.
Well, like, obviously the Europa League is a significant achievement in itself. I wouldn't necessarily doubt the worthiness of that competition, but I have no problem.
I think for certain clubs it is, and for certain clubs it isn't. If you look at Manchester United and the rest of the clubs in that competition, especially the one that they faced in the final, they are financially head and shoulders above the rest of the competition. They are talent-wise head and shoulders above the rest of the competition. So, you know, if other clubs in different contextual situations win that trophy, then yes, it is a big achievement. But for Manchester United...
Did Mourinho get way more votes than Conte? I had a brief look at this and I couldn't see many.
I've not got the votes in front of me. That's the only problem.
Because that was something I saw and I was like, Mourinho seems to have gotten a few votes more than
Conte. But it's funny.
I mean, one of them doesn't count though, because one of the votes was from Duncan Castles.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's basically a parody of himself nowadays.
Guys, I don't know if it's a good or a bad thing, but the Carabao Cup draw has now been delayed.
Oh, why? Who cares?
It's delayed until tomorrow, I'm told. We didn't get into the draw, but apparently other people close to us did.
I did see, and I saw Carabao tweet out that there was a glitch at Twitter HQ. It was apparently going to be streamed live on Twitter. I assume it might just be some sort of technical difficulty.
I'm not joking. I'm not kidding. They have Phil Tufnell at the draw. Of course, a famous footballer.
Yes. Do you want to explain who Phil Tufnell is? For 90% of people listening, you don't know who he is.
Well, Phil Tufnell's next cricketer, and the other guy from who's the other guy on Equestrian Sport? Matt, someone who's a rugby player.
Matt Dawson. So, yeah, of course.
Matt Dawson. Yeah.
Yeah. Strange.
Every white middle class person's favourite bald man.
Let's move swiftly on. We should say though, big win for West Ham. Could be a turning point for Bilic. People seem to be saying that. In my opinion, they didn't sack him last season.
Absolute rubbish.
Well, they didn't.
Small ambition.
Yeah, they didn't sack him last season when they should have, just because they beat Spurs. So I'm sure they'll keep him for longer than they should now. They've got this. No, I'm not bitter. Just, you know.
Should we touch on Claude Puel to Leicester?
Yes. Let me say one thing briefly. Is the only other notable results I can see in the Carabao Cup was Arsenal winning. Edward Nketiah, 18-year-old hero, scoring extra time. As Arsene Wenger pointed out, Nketiah wasn't even conceived when Wenger was already Arsenal manager, which is a weird thing to say, but yeah, very true.
Unusual.
Also, Bristol City thrashed Crystal Palace 4-1, which is embarrassing. So those are the two other notable results. But yes, as Nico said there, the other significant news coming out this week in the world of football, at least in England, is that Claude Puel has been appointed manager of Leicester City. What do you make of this one, Nico? Because from what I can see of Leicester fans, they seem less than inspired by this appointment.
I think it's actually a really good appointment. I really like Claude Puel. I think the most important things for clubs in the most common financial situation is matching the squad to the manager, as opposed to bringing in a manager and hoping that his idea of football will sort of, you know, come onto players that maybe they don't necessarily like. I think if you have, if somebody can, through statistical or tactical or analytical analysis, provide you with an idea of what a certain group of players that you already have do best, and you can find a manager to sort of, you know, complement that style and you think can achieve something together, then I think that's sort of the best way to go about appointing a manager if you are without one. And it's obvious that Leicester have held out for a manager that would, you know, be similar to the defensive style that they were so successful with under Ranieri, by keeping Shakespeare in there for so long. And I think it's probably fortunate that Southampton didn't stick with Claude Puel. I think that was a little unjust given how unlucky he was in front of goal and how competent he was in sort of building a defensive team. I think the defensive style that he wants to put forth is really one that can succeed in England. And I think especially with the players that have come to Leicester and the players that they already had there before, is something that he will succeed with. I don't know if Mahrez will have the greatest of times under Puel, because I think he asks a lot of his offensive players, he asks a lot of all of his players to be sort of two-way entities, but probably more one way than the other considering his defensive mindset. But I'm really excited to see what he does with players like Vicente Borra and Adrian Silva, who will join them in January. So I think it's a good move. I think it matches their players, and it's, I think, an intelligent move from the board at Leicester.
Can I just stop you there just for a sec, just because you can add Chris.
I'll do this and then I'll add Chris, ready? Interesting stuff. Let's move on to the questions then in part two.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role. Like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Right, part two. It's the questions you've been sending in on Twitter at the front three. Thank you very much for that. Joining us is Chris Hennage as well. So the gang is all here, guys. Chris, how you doing?
Yeah, not bad.
Are you ready for some serious and hard-hitting football questions?
That's all I'm ever ready for.
First up, Oliver Stoneman says... First up, Oliver Stoneman says, who'd win in a battle royale of the front three? Excellent question. I assume he's saying who would win in the fight to the death out of us five. Yeah. Do you know what? My instinct, there's something in my instinct that is saying Dave would win. I think he would would be the best fighter. I think
he's just dropped down.
He'd have been in for Ian while I'm saying this too.
Strong enough. I don't know about that.
Do you not think?
Dave literally hangs up.
Yeah, exactly. I'm done.
Fuck it. I'm not in.
Battle Royale is the one, like, sure. The film where we all get dropped on an island and it's just us and the elements and any weapons we can find, right? That's what.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Okay. So I think Dave would die fairly quickly.
I think Dave would be the most resourceful.
Me? I would die fairly quickly.
Yeah,
why?
Nico would be dead within 10 seconds.
Because Bolt would just find him and rip him limb from limb. And then I think Dave would definitely... thrive, but only because he sort of read one book about it. But then once the book's knowledge sort of runs dry, then Dave's dead.
Yes, but I think Dave would be Bolt very
resourceful. Bolt has got a lot of body fat to sort of survive for quite a while. And
But then you'd be, have you seen Empire Strikes Back? You'd cut me open and get inside, you know what I mean? Use that fat to stay warm.
And Kristen and I would live inside Adam Bolt until someone came.
I'm that big.
To save us both.
Let me just get this straight.
But then I think Dave would win. Dave is the most resourceful, and he would therefore win the battle royale out of us five.
This is a summary of how it would play out. Adam would just immediately rip me limb from limb for no reason. Dave would die, and then you would cut Adam open, and you and Chris would live inside Adam peacefully.
He'd live inside, yeah. And then, the problem, Dave would live for a while, like I said, but just muttering Jose Mourinho's pragmatism and be on the beach just like, it's the only way to live.
I think Dave would win out of our round personally, but then the question is, if it's you and Chris who are left quivering and hiding inside my carcass, who would turn on the other first? I think Lawrence.
Well, this is the thing:
Lawrence would turn first. Chris is too nice, so therefore you turn on him, and then you'd win.
I'm wily. I'll give you that, Adam. Something you got like my character just right.
Something like that. Let's turn on to a real football question. Who is the fourth best player in the world? Says Mark Hardingham. Dave, who are the three best players in the world? First off, is it
as clear? Just so annoyed with Skype right now. I literally missed the conversation about Battle Royale.
Oh, no.
You know, one of my favourite films, because they kept on logging out. They need to sort their UI out. It's pathetic. Who, the buttons Skype? Are too small for my big chubby fingers. Well, just killing me.
Sort your big chubby fingers out, you fucking...
Dave, I was trying to say...
Well, you can't do finger weights, can you, Lawrence?
I was trying to say those big chubby fingers would see you win the Battle Royale.
Yeah, I think I'd take the Battle Royale.
Yeah, you'd wrap those big chubby fingers around Lawrence's neck, wouldn't you? That'd be that.
I've been watching a lot of gangster documentaries recently. Very interesting.
Watching one series of gangster documentaries and then telling us it's lots of.
No, actually, I've moved on from the New York mob now. Now I'm on the Irish mob. Both very interesting.
Interesting. Back on the question at hand, because the Battle Royale one was good. I see the temptation to keep talking about it. But we have got to talk about actual football. Who is the fourth best player in the world? Dave, who are the best free players in the world, first off? Is it as clear-cut as we usually do?
Messi, Ronaldo. Definitely still number one and number two.
Maybe Mbappe.
I think Marcelo last season was in with a shout of being top three. I thought he was fantastic. I think he's reasonably kept that form this season. But there could be the likes of Neymar this season, calendar year. He's been pretty good. Obviously, the exit with Barca, maybe not that same level as some of the Real players. I think Real are sort of heads and shoulders. Casemiro as well. Definitely got to be in the discussion. In terms of being fourth, Casemiro could be fourth in there. But then you think in Marouane Fellaini and what he's done for Manchester United in 2017 has been pretty incredible. So I'd probably put Fellaini fourth, Casemiro third, Ronaldo, Messi.
You cannot be serious.
Wow. Who's your fourth, Nico?
Kevin De Bruyne, isn't it?
Wow, not Harry Kane. Strange.
Kevin De Bruyne is definitely out there.
Fourth best player in the world for you, Lawrence?
Oh, what do you say, really? I mean, so have you named... Wait, who's putting your top... Who have we agreed is the top three?
Let's just say, I think, put the common...
Messi, Ronaldo, Neymar.
Messi, Ronaldo, Neymar. Yes, so therefore, who is the fourth after those three?
That one's a tricky one, isn't it?
Trent Alexander-Arnold.
Yeah, do not say...
Just because literally the other day I said that I liked him at right back for Liverpool.
Oh, you think he's the greatest full-time, do you?
Yeah, I do. Well, he could be. That's a really good question. I'm trying to rank the leagues a little bit at the moment because I'm also quite impressed. I'm trying to think of which players individually the best because there are a lot of players playing very well within systems right now. And I sort of think the system massively benefits them. Whereas Ronaldo and Messi look like they go between any system and still thrive. It's somewhat the same as Neymar does with Brazil. I'm trying to think of another player who's up on the international stage. Is there a German player that you can put up there?
Surely not. No.
Toni Kroos.
Toni Kroos is not a bad chat. I don't think he's in great, fantastic form at the moment. I think
we've got to start the propaganda for Mesut Ozil to join Manchester United. So I might as well say he's the fourth best player in the world.
I mean, Chris, surely at this point, we've got to start the propaganda for Jonjo Shelvey being in the England squad for the World Cup.
Not the fourth best. No, I think it's De Bruyne. Yeah, De Bruyne or Kane.
Good show.
They're both excel in their position.
Here is another question.
No defenders mentioned there, just weirdly. Yeah. Just saying. I mean, Sergio Ramos, arguably, after Zidane's quotes the other night.
Marcelo's a defender.
Yeah.
Not really.
Yeah, he's really a left winger.
Here is a question from Alex Davison.
Alexander Arnold.
Will this be another trophyless season for Spurs? They are out of the League Cup already.
What do you think, Alex? We don't even need to answer
this. The squad depth of Manchester City and United. Can they compete? I think most people would say, Surely Man City are favourites for the title. Looks like Spurs could potentially be their nearest rivals along with Manchester United. I think, yes, the league and the FA Cup are now the best chances of silverware. But therefore, it could be another trophy for the season, unfortunately. Let's see how it unfolds. I think let's come back to that later on in the season. Here is a question. We'll give it to you, Dave. I think you've already answered it on Twitter. Are Valencia the most exciting team in Spain? Says Alex on Twitter.
Yeah, definitely so. They're very, very exciting. Guardes is one of the best young players in world football. You know, bought from Benfica. I saw him playing for Benfica. I was impressed by his work rate and his sort of talent to create chances as a number 10. But now the Valencia playing on the left. No, stupid internet.
Dave, just check Twitter again.
Yeah, they're good. They're very good. So if you've got some time, watch Valencia.
Who's their coach? Who's the Valencia coach?
Marcelinho.
Ah, right.
Very, very good coach. Did some great stuff with Villarreal, with the likes of Bakambu, Denis Suarez. So he's a very talented manager, and he's got them playing a 4-4-2 that's very aesthetically pleasing on the eye. And someone like Kondogbia, that I think Kondogbia's a real talent. I've seen Kondogbia tear teams apart on his own with his ability to break the play up and then drive through midfield. But there's been games for Inter Milan where he's anonymous. So I think under Marcelinho, he's doing the role that he should be doing. It's the same role that Yardim gave him at Monaco, being destructive, playing next to someone like Pareo, who's Kratos, controlling the tempo of the game. Basically, Kondogbia can just roam around. Honestly, a little bit like a Patrick Vieira type midfielder. So there's just a lot of good components. Then you've got Zaha, obviously, and Rodrigo up front. And, you know, Andres Pereira off the bench. Solar on the right wing, who's come through the academy at Benfica, that plays a little bit like David Beckham. Basically, they're a little bit like United 99, if I were to class them as any side. And that's why they're so exciting.
Zaza, did you say? Yeah, Simone Zaza.
Simone Zaza this season is banging goals in for fun.
Yeah. Proofy says, what do you think of Simone Zaza's resurgence, and what part do you think Marcelino is playing in it? So he's basically answered that, so there's another question down. Here is a question. Let's give this to you, Chris. What do you think of the Common Goal initiative involving Mata, Hummels, etc.? That's from James Harling on Twitter. Shinji Kagawa also signed up apparently today to the initiative, which sees footballers donate, I believe, 1% of their earnings to charity. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm not sure what the charity is or the charities are. I think, yeah, it's a nice thing. You could argue in some ways it, because of its public nature, it almost encourages players to be more involved. I think Alex Morgan's included as well, and Serge Gnabry is another one, along with Chiellini, who is quite an interesting character. I think. Personally, I get caught between two minds with this kind of stuff, because footballers are very blessed financially and also in terms of the platform they have. So I think whenever they can be involved in philanthropy, that's a great thing, but it should never be forced. They should always want to do it naturally, because I think charity isn't charity when it's forced.
That is part of the problem, isn't it? Is also there are some people saying, I think it was only 17 players that have signed up for this. Some people saying, I can't believe it's only 17 players that have signed up. And I do wonder how many of those players have already signed up or given something else to charity, and therefore maybe don't see the need to donate 1%. This is one of many causes. I think a lot of people seem to think that players don't give unless they publicly give. So it's a tricky. Yeah,
I think it's good. Well, they're publicly giving in part also to raise awareness, I assume, and it encourages other footballers to do it. And
good point.
I think it's a great initiative. We have a question here from Gulad Mohammed, who asks, why does Iniesta make the World 11 when he's clearly past it, while Casemiro, who even scored a crucial goal in the final, gets ignored? What do you reckon, Mika? I mean, we discussed this on Monday. Perhaps should have been Casemiro, perhaps Isco, someone like that, in the team instead of Iniesta.
I think, and sort of when we were talking about the manager vote situation a little bit earlier, it's always interesting to see how, you know, players vote, because obviously certain things that appease certain players and the respect that they have for the qualities of the other individuals who occupy the same professional space, you know, in their game they obviously vote for certain qualities, and it's always interesting to see like the consistencies among those votes and how maybe someone who maybe there's a player that we don't necessarily think is that great is always voted for. Like, I think that was sort of the case, or that is sort of the case right now with maybe Luka Modric and Toni Kroos. They're obviously fantastic players, but they don't necessarily impact the goal and assist charts in a major way because of the position that they play. But we still see them year in and year out sort of get into the best squads and you know the most voted teams because of the respect that they accrue of their fellow professionals. And I think that kind of goes for Iniesta as well, is that he may not necessarily be impacting the field or the pitch as he once did in his younger years, but there is still an enormous amount of respect. Like, we hear players talk about one another and say, you know, he was just impossible to play against. His quickness, his movement, his passing was just impossible to deal with. And maybe that's something that is still apparent to anyone who plays against him. And I think that's probably why he still gets the votes.
But on the flip side of that as well, you're not going to remember playing against someone like Casemiro or someone like Vidal or someone like N'Golo Kante, because they're just going to be kicking lumps out you for the whole game. You're not going to
remember that. I think you'll remember that.
He was the best player I played this season, because you'll think, oh, I hated playing against him. You know, that's the process, isn't it, in terms of the vote? It's not going to be, you know, Casemiro should have got sent off in the quarterfinal, semi-final of Champions League and stayed on the pitch because he's smart.
Look at how people have voted, like, in that same vein for N'Golo Kante. They've said, like, every time I played against him, he was just impossible to get around. He was everywhere. So they would say the same for Casemiro and Vidal. And I think there's a point there that they probably should be included in these 11s, and not enough defensive players are. But I just think, you know, it's probably that case. Like, there are still defensive players being voted for.
Here is one for you, Lawrence. I mean, the answer is obvious if you think about it. Josie11 says, who is the next player who will become a successful manager? You know, the likes of Giggs, Lahm, Buffon, etc., he says. There's one candidate, the answer to every question, the staring in the face.
I mean, don't stop leading me down the garden path. I've already seen the path. I'm already down it.
So thank God. Yes. Think that should make a good manager? I mean, he'd make a very stylish manager, but a good manager.
I mean, I think... just because you're stylish doesn't mean you lack substance. Mm. I mean, just ask Dave.
True, very true.
I mean, the point is that Xabi Alonso is also one of those players, I think, who read the game very well, seemed to understand it quite a lot, seems like a very considered guy. You know, there's a lot there for him to pass on, and I think he's well-respected within a lot of circles. I do think that Xabi Alonso will probably make a good part of a management team. I also do wonder sometimes in the future what that Spain squad's going to have. And, you know, they're obviously going to have the likes of Iniesta, Xabi Alonso, Iniesta, and maybe someone like Xavi, someone else, you know, the Puyol types, few players. We'll see. There are a few people who in the future may be found out as frauds of players because they don't or whatever. But in the meantime, let's just say Xabi Alonso.
Speaking of transitioning into management, we have a question here from Germai Tech Lab, who says, if Red Bull bought a team in League Two, would you take said team to win the Premier League before Arsenal wins it again? Dave, we may as well throw this to you. You're doing the badges and everything, right? You're doing some coaching courses.
Yeah, definitely would work for Red Bull, and definitely would, you know, the team would be good, because I think they've built a model in Leipzig, and they've built a model in New York that it's sort of geared to playing quite attractive football and pressing football and sort of this new age football. So, you know, I think there'd be a lot of work that you do, but I think the structure's in place to create something pretty special in England and sort of showcase these other styles of football that we haven't really seen anyone that's been as aggressive as a Leipzig, or as aggressive as, you know, someone like that over in Germany, let's say. So it'd be quite exciting, to be quite honest.
Red Bull Barnet.
They did almost buy Leeds, didn't they? They almost bought Leeds.
Blimey.
Don't think I'd do Leeds, though, unfortunately.
Yeah, maybe not. Dave, what coaching courses are you doing at the moment for the listeners who might not have heard about
it? Just doing the FA Level 1. That's now a four-day course, plus your child safety and your first aid. It's really interesting. Going to probably get a club or get a team in Manchester and then do the level 2, then the UEFA B and then the UEFA A. So it's you know, it's time to have fun.
And you're going to be leading London City to next level football glory as well, surely?
Yeah, I've sent my CV in to the chairman of London City, so I'm just waiting for a response. Obviously, I probably have to get the qualification before, you know, he can really take me on and you know, properly employ me.
We'll see. You need a PowerPoint presentation, everything to really impress him. But yeah, we have to make the playoffs first. We have to make the playoffs. Let's carry on with the questions here. There's no one there for Dave. We'll leave that for a second. Blah, 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 blah. Here's one for you, Lawrence, that I'd be confused by. Charles Antonidis says, despite their reputation, are the Dildo Brothers in fact the most generous men in football? I'm not quite sure what's inspired that question. Is there something I've missed with the owners of West Ham?
Yes, in many ways, yeah. The Dildo Brothers are big givers.
Yes, well said. Let's move on from that very quickly. Chris Karim Solomon says, is finishing overrated as a skill? Conversion doesn't seem to vary as much overall relatively, so is creating more chances not more crucial? Make of that what you will.
I understand the question.
Good.
The thing is, no, I don't think finishing is overrated, because I think you can look at the way the market dictates prices for that, in so much as number 10s go for less than number 9s, and I'm just using numbers to indicate position there rather than, I know there's different types of striker, but there's a reason that Harry Kane and Mbappe and Neymar go for so much, is because they provide goals. I think that there is an art to being a creator that's underrated. That much is true. But what I think is different is that, and it was an American coach actually that told me this fairly recently, is that there are a lot of players who want to be number 10s, but there are a much smaller number that can actually do it in terms of taking the ball, finding the right spaces and creating opportunities. So, yeah, I would say that creators are underrated, but that doesn't mean that striking or finishing is overrated.
Carlos Zaldivar, long-time listener, says, granted, it's very early, but with City, Barcelona, PSG and Napoli/Inter all leading in their respective leagues, having yet to lose a game, could we see any of them do an invincible season? And if so, which team would you hedge your bets on, Nico?
I'd probably say that Manchester City wouldn't be able to do it. I would be surprised if they got through an entire Premier League season without, you know, losing to someone. But I think of those teams that he mentioned, I would say Napoli have a real chance to do it, because I think they're doing really, really well in Serie A. Inter, the least of those. I don't necessarily think they're going to go all wins, but I think it'll be some draws. But I think if any of those teams do have a chance, like the best chance, not saying that they'll do it, but if somebody does, I think it's Napoli.
Wow.
Okay. Big shout. Final question, because we're running out of time. We've got to move on to the previews for this weekend. It's from Luke Dorr. We'll go one by one. If you were going to cook, if you're all going to go on Come Dine With Me, what would you cook and why? Lawrence, you first.
Great question.
If we were all on Come Dine With Me, what would you cook for us all and why?
Okay. My starter would be... Oh, I thought we had to go starters.
Yeah, sorry.
I thought it was just one dish.
I thought it was just one dish, but I think let's go one dish, simplify it. Let's go for one main course. What are you going to blow us away with?
One main course. Wow. I do a really nice chicken.
Chicken.
I do just good chicken.
Yeah.
I also just think it's chicken carbonara is, I have a really good chicken carbonara. It's excellent. I mean, like, to the point where chicken stock with the pasta. It's just a really nice, it's quite a light meal, surprisingly.
Wow.
It's excellent. It's really beautiful.
Is that your personal twist that makes it special, that it's a light carbonara
stock? It can be quite light, and then I pair it and I mix in some rocket into the
bold
actual cup. It's beautiful.
That is, you bold really will like it. Nico, yeah. What would you be cooking?
I think in sort of a similar vein to that, it would definitely be a pasta dish. I'd go whole grain penne. And then do like a spicier sauce with some sun-dried tomatoes. Oof. And maybe some nice little piece of chicken cut up into that to make it a nice rounded dish.
Whole grain penne, not for me, Clive. I'm afraid you've lost me.
Whole grain penne is actually quite nice.
You've lost
me.
Yeah,
I like whole grain
penne. Lost me. Dave, what are you cooking?
I was going to cook pasta, but you two are cooking pasta, so obviously pasta that galore sort of rules me out of cooking pasta. Would have gone for some.
Let me guess. Pizza,
tomato, But instead, we're going to go for a chickpea curry. Ooh, simple as pie. Different. We're going to have a rata with it. We're going to have some naan bread. And yeah, it's going to be bloody amazing.
Oof, that sounds pretty good. Chris, what are you cooking up?
Tuna sandwiches.
Good. Fuck. You can all suck him off. Fuck off.
My specialty is Mexican chili con carne. Spicy, wholesome, beautiful. I think that would be...
What about the chili?
On that note, let's move on to part three.
He's talking about your genitals.
It's the... I'll go at the start. It's the Fan League Preview. Right, it's the weekend preview in association with Fan League. You know it by now. Fan League is the football prediction app that lets you take on your mates to predict the outcome of the weekend's top football matches. We're doing pretty well now, right now, I've got to say. We're averaging around 9 correct results a week, I think, so far, over the past couple of weeks. So if you think you can beat that and beat the combined brain power of the front three, then do come and join our league and take us on. Just click the link in the description of this podcast for more. Remember, Fan League donates 10% of their revenues to youth and grassroots football projects if you needed another reason to join. So, as always on Fan League, we're predicting the outcome of 13 English League, Premier League and Championship matches, selecting a home win, an away win or a draw. Let's get into the predictions. We'll go one by one. I'll go around us all to get all of our expert opinions. We'll start with you, Nico. West Brom hosting Manchester City this weekend on Saturday. Wow. Talk to me. Preview this game. Tell me, is it a home win? Is it an away win for City? Or is it a draw?
Probably say away win. City have been in pretty glittering form as of late. Their movement off the ball, like I mentioned earlier, the triangles. Triangles of movement sort of really, really difficult to deal with. So I think it'll just be a continuation of the form. It'll probably be not an easy win for City, but I'd be surprised if they struggle all that much.
Chris, we've got Watford Stoke as well on Saturday. High-flying Watford there. Surely the favourites to win?
Yeah, I'm presuming this is Vicarage Road.
It is indeed.
I don't like Stoke at the minute. They just seem a little bit flat whenever I watch them. Whereas Watford's decor seems to be growing with each week, and the fact that Kapu can't get a kick and is talking in the press about trying to get a new contract says I think that Decore is doing a lot. So yeah, I think Watford will take that. Probably 2-1, something like that.
Okay, we'll go for a home win.
A little
there.
Flat is a very generous way to describe Stoke right now.
Yeah, funnily enough, 0% of Fan League users believe there will be an away win there for Stoke. So we'll go with the 75% who believe Watford are going to win it. Liverpool against Huddersfield at Anfield. Lawrence, surely a home win, a much needed home win to change the narrative around Jurgen Klopp and his side.
The actual press versus Liverpool. It's going to be an interesting one because those guys are going to be motivated after what they've achieved against Manchester United. I think they're going to probably be able to do the same against Liverpool. I mean, you'd say a fairly distraught squad after the low of last weekend for Liverpool. A lot of infighting amongst the press in Liverpool. A lot of people talking about how unhappy some of the players are, or some of them are defecting in a way, and people trying to keep that sort of thing quiet. I think it's difficult for Liverpool fans to work out exactly what's true and what isn't right now. And I guess the big issue is that it sort of means it makes it difficult to work out exactly what's going on in Jurgen Klopp's team. So if there's any game you're going to bet sort of against what you consider to be the favourites, it would be this game this weekend. And then do the, what's the misery compiler or whatever it is on it?
You mean to hedge?
Sure, hedge it.
Yeah. Hedge it means you get to choose two results on, I believe, 5 of the games, so we can sort of hedge our odds.
Yeah, so go Huddersfield to win, hedge it.
So you want me to go Huddersfield to win, away win and home win, essentially? You want to go for both?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Okay, we'll do that. I definitely don't agree with that at all, but we'll do it, and I could be proved wrong. We've also got Crystal Palace against West Ham. Dave, coming up on Saturday. Pass, of course, beat Chelsea, a big win. But since then, they've lost to Newcastle. They've now lost to Bristol in the week. So is this a West Ham week coming off the back of that big win over Spurs?
No, I don't think so. I think Crystal Palace and Roy Hodgson will defeat West Ham and Bilic. Wow. I think it's going to be a defensive game from Palace, but a game that will catch West Ham out. You know, defensively, their transition from attack to defence is absolutely atrocious. Too many flair players in that side at the moment, not enough workers. And I think Roy Hodgson's team are just going to outmuscle them and outwork them. And I think it's going to be maybe a 2-0 win. Home for Zaha with a brace.
Okay, we'll go for a home win then. Nico, we've also got Arsenal v Swansea, the final Premier League game in the Fan League predictions this weekend. What do you make of that one? Home win?
It's a difficult one because I think of the analysis maybe that Lawrence mentioned a few weeks ago of Swansea is a disconnection between some of the forward play and some of the play behind. And I think some of that is down to Paul Clement for some reason not using some of their summer signings in Roque Mesa and others in an intelligent way. But I think maybe they're starting to work out some of those issues with some recent pickup in form. So I'd like to think that maybe this is going to be a draw.
Ooh, a draw. Okay. We'll go for that then. I'm going to hedge it with a home win as well, just to be safe. On Sunday, Chris, we've got Bournemouth welcoming Chelsea.
Wait, sorry, did someone just say Arsenal and Swansea are going to draw?
Yes. So I did. He said it. Don't agree with it, but we're going to go with it. We're also going to go for an Arsenal home win as well. Bournemouth-Chelsea, Chris?
Bournemouth-Chelsea. It's at Bournemouth-Chelsea. See, that one I think would be more likely to be a draw if I was going to pick a big team stumbling.
Yeah, I like that.
Bournemouth have picked up of late. It's just...
We could do a bit of hedging on that one. We can go for an away win and a draw.
Yeah,
I think that
I would say hedge that one on a draw and a potential away win. Although... to sound almost like Paul Merson, don't be shocked if Bournemouth win.
What about
Paul Machen never said that. Yeah. All right.
What about Brighton Southampton, Lawrence? I was very impressed last time I saw Brighton play, which albeit was against Everton, so that may be why. But two very similar teams in very similar positions. Brighton for a home win, though, home advantage.
Yeah, you know, I think this one, I'm going to base my prediction on confidence and teams going into it. With that element, the only problem is I think Brighton don't look as savvy. Let's go for a surprise in this one. No, Brighton will lose.
Wow, okay, so going for an away win for Southampton. Fair enough. We've also got Leicester against Everton on Sunday. Both teams potentially with that new manager bounce or looking for it at least. Claude Puel, of course, at Leicester, and David Unsworth, manager's first league game at least for Everton. I think on form, we're going to go for a Leicester win. They haven't been playing badly this season, they haven't been picking up the results. I think they will get that bounce, so we'll go for a home win there. And briefly, in the Championship games, we've got QPR against Wolves. Wolves on form, league leaders at the moment, although they did play 120 minutes against City midweek. I think we'll go with Wolves, though, as the current league leaders said. We've also got Norwich Derby. Norwich haven't lost a game since August, so we're going to go for a home win for Norwich. Cardiff Millwall. Cardiff have been very good this season, currently second, so we'll go for a home win for them. And we've also got Hull against Nottingham Forest. We'll go for Hull there. We'll give them the home advantage. And finally, we've got Aston Villa against Birmingham local derby. Villa on form though after a slow start. 5 wins out of 6. So we're going to go for an away win for Villa there. Okay, so that's our fan league prediction done then. Do check them out on Twitter. Do join the league. Do take us on if you think you can do better. As I said, we're averaging about 9 correct results a week. So we're not doing too badly. Remember, if you get 10 results correct, you win. If you get 13 right, you win a huge cash prize. So do get involved if you want your chance to win that. One game before we go that wasn't involved in the fan league preview, though, Dave, is the big game of the weekend. Manchester United against Tottenham at Old Trafford. We did discuss this on Monday, how we thought it might play out tactically. But closer to Saturday now, we're looking at maybe Harry Kane potentially being out. Mauricio Pochettino sort of being a bit coy in his post-match press conference last night after the defeat to West Ham. Paul Pogba back in training, potentially maybe even back for this game. How do you think this one's going to go? What's your score prediction, Dave?
I think it's going to be a real cagey game. I think Mourinho will match Spurs for their systems in a way. I think it will be Spurs playing, you know, two attacking midfielders off Harry Kane, Manchester United playing two strikers with one behind. But then the rest of the team, I think it'll be man for man, you know, back three, then four across the middle. So it's going to be a real interesting game. You find when teams play the same systems that it gets sort of, they get taken down to the same level. So that's kind of bad news for Tottenham in a way, because they are at the moment, one of the best teams going forward in the Premier League. Manchester is struggling at the moment. In the last four games, United have failed to create over 10 chances. So there's a bit of an issue there. Obviously, Henrik Mkhitaryan was rested in midweek, which is a very, very good thing because he's pretty much carrying United's creative force on his own without Paul Pogba. So I think it's that rotation. But on top of that, I think there's some real key things. If Harry Kane's out and Llorente's in, that's a real moment for Manchester United to think, you know, we could win this game. But again, I think I'm going to go with a 1-0 win United. Scrappy as anything. United. Mkhitaryan.
Chris, have you got a score prediction for us? It all depends on Kane, doesn't it? It does depend on Kane, but...
Yeah. It's at Man United as well, which helps them. My mind says 2-1 Tottenham.
I like your style. I like your style. Nico, what are you saying?
I am saying 2-0 Tottenham.
Ooh, bloody hell. Lawrence?
I'm going to go a draw, actually. I'm going to go 1-1 between these two sides. I don't think either of them are going to be able to master too much because, you know, I mean, it's disappointing for you. Dave will be obviously aroused.
Yeah, something like that. I think if we've got Kane, if Spurs have got Kane, I think 2-1 to Spurs without him, 2-1 to Manchester United. Could go either way. I think that's how important he is.
Are we seeing a bit of mind games here from Pochettino? Because he does that thing where he lies.
I hope so. About Kane. He sort of came out after the game against Liverpool on the weekend and said, you know, oh, it's just a knock, essentially. It's not a hamstring injury, which is definitely what it looked like when he hobbled off the pitch, sort of holding the back of his leg there. So hopefully it's a bit of mind games to sort of keep Manchester United and Mourinho on their toes. He seemed delighted with himself after the Real Madrid game to have sort of sprung that surprise with the formation he set his team up with. So we'll see. It could be one of those mind games, as you say. But guys, do let us know what you think the score is going to be on Twitter at @FrontFree until Monday when we'll be back to review it all, as well as all the Premier League action. Chris Hennage, where can the listeners find you?
At @FrontFree.
Oh, lovely. Selfless. Dave?
Everywhere.
Disturbing.
Wow.
Lawrence.
Nowhere.
Ooh, mysterious. Nico.
There will be a bonus podcast. I am
told. Oh, yeah, that's good.
So, you know, go ahead and check that out at the Front Three. That's where I'll be.
Yes, there is a bonus podcast coming this Saturday with Nico on Borussia Dortmund. Do you want to give a little tease, Nico?
Yeah, we spoke to a writer for ESPN, ESPN Insider, Stefan Buschko, who specifically sort of covers Dortmund and the Bundesliga. And it was really nice chat with him about Dortmund and the Bundesliga in general. So I recommend that you all go and check it out.
I think your recommended title was Borussia Dortmund with Stefan Buschko. I might make it something a bit more exciting. That remains to be seen. But either way, guys,
I think it was a lot longer than that. Yeah. You didn't like my title.
There will be. Nonetheless, a bonus podcast in the feed on Saturday, guys. I do look forward to that in the morning. Until Monday, like I say, when we'll be back with a weekend review, have a bloody great weekend.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.